You're joining the conversation with Shortlisted, a podcast from the Greater Midwest Chapter, or GMC, of the Association of Proposal Management Professionals. We chat about proposals, the business of winning work, and nailing the shortlists in our lives. I'm your host, Paul Lockwood, Senior Sales Operations Analyst for Vitality Group in Chicago.
And I'm co-host Heather Finch, the leader of Proposal and Presentation Solutions for Guardian Life. I am talking to you from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
This month, we're having a chat with Mercedes Thompson. Hi, Mercedes. Can you introduce yourself?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here to chat about lifelong learning. I have 11 years experience in professional marketing. I started off in law, went over to grant writing while I was at the universities teaching college writing there. And then I ended up in AEC. So right now I work for Burns & McDonnell as a proposal manager. And I'm talking to you out of Louisville today.
Okay. Well, we are certainly representing our Midwest chapter all over the place. So let's have a discussion about lifelong learning. Mercedes, has a learning mindset or lifelong commitment to education helped guide your proposal management career?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think how it really guides me is I consider myself an educator and a teacher more than a proposal manager. And so what I mean by that is, sure, I do proposals, right? Like that's what I do day to day, but it's always from first the perspective of a student. So I'm asking questions like, how can I get better at this? What skills do I need to hone? Who can I learn from that's on my team or in my network? And then also from the perspective of a teacher. So I'm really interested in how I can teach this to others, how I can mentor people. Can I develop a useful tool? Is it easy for what I'm doing to be adopted into someone else's workload? So I would just say my commitment to education is really bringing that viewpoint to all things proposal management. It's how I continue to be relevant in an industry that's always changing. And it's certainly how I interact with my teammates in especially how I'm mentoring new professionals.
So like many teachers, you're a very classy person then.
Bing, gotcha. See what you did there.
So Mercedes, I think sometimes when I hear the term lifelong learner or lifelong learning, I think about, accumulating degrees or going back to school or even, you know, things like professional development, like getting certified through APMP. What are your thoughts on what it really means to be a lifelong learner?
Yeah, so it is all of those things, but it's also not those things, right? So I am a person that's like, I want the certification. I want to test myself. That way there's some kind of accountability behind the learning. But really, I think lifelong learning comes from a place of asking questions constantly and then making sure that you're thinking about resources and sharing those resources, right? As long as you're thinking, okay, what am I doing? How can I share this? It's coming from a place where you're learning and where you're educating others.
I always ask questions to the nth degree, and that often makes people a little bit annoyed with me, actually. But how important is curiosity, whether it's in life, in proposals, career development, and so on?
Yeah, that's a huge question. So I feel like I should preface this by saying my bachelor's degree is in literature. My master's is in English. So at the core, I'm a humanitarian. And what that means for me is I'm interested in human culture, history, philosophy, arts, right? And that's really all about asking questions of how we created the world we're in and how that world then creates us. And so curiosity, right? It's when I'm in a position to hire or even impact hiring, I'm not looking necessarily for the person with the most experience. In fact, that's kind of been not my take at all. Usually I'm looking for the person who's asking the right questions and is eager to learn, is really, amped and eager to learn. So generally speaking, the smartest people I know in this industry and just life in general are the ones that aren't afraid to ask questions. They aren't afraid to put themselves in someone else's shoes. They're really just bringing that curiosity into every aspect of their life.
Usually when I put myself in someone else's shoes, I get in trouble. because they don't want me having their my feet in their shoes.
I thought you were going to go with they didn't fit. Oh, man.
Well, you know, I have a lot of soul today, so.
Ooh, soul. I see that.
So, Mercedes, you know, you're talking about how when you like to evaluate candidates and bringing people into the organization, you like to evaluate curiosity. But how do you encourage self-reflection and introspection in people that might not be there already?
Wow, that's a great question. So my husband says I reflect more than anybody he knows, which is like a good thing and a bad thing. So every conversation I've ever had, I think I've had that conversation again in the shower later that night, right? Like I'm the person who rewinds and reflects on everything I've ever done. As you can imagine, it's a great tool. It's also a little much. But I think it promotes self-awareness in myself and makes me a better human. But when someone's not there yet, or a lot of times when I'm mentoring and someone's maybe just, you're learning a lot of things at once, you're trying to take that in, I encourage like checklist and kind of writing down processes. So for instance, I am mentoring someone in my organization right now, and we're on a proposal deadline that's really fast, and we don't always have time to debrief and kind of reflect on our choices. So what I asked her to do is just keep a live Word document and make notes in there. What are we doing? What steps are we taking? So that later when we do have the time, we can sit down together and be like, why do you think we did this? What choices did we make here? Why did we make those? Could we have made them better? You know, why did we scale back this but enhance this part of proposal management? So those types of things, and often it's really hard in a deadline-oriented environment, but making time to think about those choices and think about why we're making those decisions, but also think about it together. I think that's important, right? So learning for me is a social process. You can learn alone, sure. But you learn a lot better when you're discussing it with people.
How important is it to be adaptable or flexible in this kind of environment?
Yeah, if we're in proposals, I don't know that there's a better skill than flexibility, right? There's like a commercial going around. I think it's an Indeed commercial, and your guy's sitting there and he's like, when did something, you know, the interviewee poses the question that's like, when did something not go the way you planned? And how did you react to that? And I think that's hilarious as a proposal manager, because a better question is, when did something actually go as I planned? Right. And so one thing I've always thought in this industry is something that's really hard to teach is that like thinking on our feet, and that comes with confidence and being in the industry a long time. But it's probably one of our best assets is like, we have to be able to be flexible. We have to be ready for people to not meet the deadlines. Sometimes we have to be ready for people not to show up to the meetings, right? That happens.
So Mercedes is flexible. In other words, Mercedes Benz.
Oh, that was, man.
I know that was actually a good one, right, Heather?
That was, like, took a second. Yeah, that yeah. Like, yes.
I think yes. That gets 2 points.
We're going to move on to our next segment of our program here, which is the best thing that happened to you this month.
Ooh.
So, Heather, what was the best thing that happened to you this month?
All right. So we're only on episode 3, and I'm already going to bend the rules a little bit because I had 2 really great things happen to me today. One personal, one professional. So in the professional world, this morning I got to co-host a webinar with Karin Olsen-Held about mentoring. So if any of you listened to our first episode of Shortlisted and want to dig in more to that conversation, the recording to that should be posted shortly on our GMC website. It was so much fun to be able to dig into that conversation a little bit more and really get to the heart of mentoring. The second thing that happened to me today that was super exciting is maybe not so exciting. Had to take my car into the shop. Had a little bit of a part that fell off on it, and But the wonderful thing was that I got it in, they fixed it, they didn't find anything else wrong, and it only costed me a quarter more than it would have cost if I bought the part myself. Now, I mean, a quarter, like 25% more, not a quarter.
25 cents, my gosh.
But I still thought that was
a cheap labor.
Yeah, I was pretty excited by that. In fact, I think I might have dropped a four-letter word when they gave me the quote, and I was like, "Holy bleep, that's amazing!" So exciting stuff in my world.
Cool.
Anytime, yeah. Anytime car things go right, that is exciting.
Yes.
That was your automotive today. Mercedes, what's a great thing that happened to you in the past month?
Yeah, if she gets to bend the rule, I get to bend the rule. So professionally, I earned 40 under 40, which was very, very exciting. I know. Nice. Yeah, it was really great. And then personally, my son turned one this month. I know. His name is Sebastian. And I realized at his first birthday party that I finally, for the first time in a year plus the pregnancy, so almost 2 years, I finally feel like I know what I'm doing a little bit.
Wow.
Like I'm not an expert yet, but I'm also not just like throwing darts at the wall. And that's a really amazing feeling. That's the best thing that's happened.
Fabulous.
I take it Pin the Tail on the Donkey wasn't one of the games, so you weren't literally throwing darts at the wall. Okay. Just confirming. As far as the best thing that happened to me in the past month was related to Toastmasters, the international organization, helps its members with public speaking, organization, interpersonal skills. Well, Toastmasters has these individual clubs that are part of an area, then they have areas that are part of divisions, and they have divisions that are part of districts. When they have contests, those are the levels that you move from. If you're successful at your club, you go to the area, successful at the area, you go to division, successful at division, you go to district. The district that I'm in is all of the northwest, west, northern suburbs of Chicago, and I think a good chunk of Chicago. And I competed in the Table Topics contest last weekend as part of their conference over Zoom. And that's the extemporaneous speaking for those who are not familiar. You have 1 to 2.5 minutes to address a particular topic that you don't know what it's going to be until you are ushered in from the breakout room into the main room, and then they tell you the topic. As a side note, I've always wondered if prisoners were on Zoom, do they allow them to have a breakout room? I don't know. Anyhow, so you have to start your mini speech within about 15 seconds of hearing the topic. And it's really tough because it's not like you can table the topic and topics. The topic we were each given was, would you break the law and commit a crime to save a loved one? And they repeat it. And then you're supposed to start within 10 or 15 seconds talking for a minute to 2.5 minutes on that topic. Just think about how you might address that. Well, I did my best. But of the six contestants, I didn't break into the top three, maybe because breaking in was a crime I didn't want to do. You know, and if I said I'd break the law, I'd probably be caught, and that would be kind of an arrested development that I would not be looking forward to. So kind of setting those puns aside, if public speaking scares you or you just want to have a good time and improve your speaking, I encourage everybody to go to Toastmasters.org, find a club near you. Just don't find a billy club unless you're using it as a prop in a speech, in which case, props to you.
Thank you, Paul, for that. That was fantastic. I'm going to go ahead and move it along to Dear GMC. Dear GMC is your opportunity to submit questions and get advice from fellow proposal professionals. So we've got a question from one of our members. Dear GMC, I am pretty sure I made a bad situation worse. I have a subject matter expert who is an essential writer and also one of the worst offenders for missing deadlines. I tried all the best practices on her, setting expectations up front, providing internal milestone deadlines, and giving her reminders. When none of these worked, I went to her manager. Well, that at least got her to respond to me. She confronted me for tattling and is even less responsive than she was before. Thankfully, we're only in the office one day a week. I don't think I could handle her cold shoulder any more than that. I'm hoping for your advice. Firstly, what should I do with her now? And secondly, what can I do to get ahead of this in the future? Sincerely, Ben, a tattle. So what are your thoughts for Ben here? Mercedes, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, happy to. So what do you do now? I think is the harder question, right? Because it's already a little bit awkward. I think there's two answers. Well, since we've already kind of accelerated and went to the boss, now we need to make sure that we're on the same page with the boss, and the boss knows the expectations and can communicate them and kind of be your advocate. You've already went there, so you might as well get someone that's on your side advocating. But then also, I would probably at this point really try to push things along and show that I'm still being a team player. So I might provide some boilerplate, so, you know, a starting point, and just show like, hey, I'm meeting you halfway. I'm trying to help here. I might also, you know, we have in our organization a group of young professionals, and I really think this is a great idea, that want to get involved in proposals later in their career. And so they often volunteer to help busy SMEs. And so that might be something I do too. I might reach out to other folks and say, hey, if you have some availability to help this person out or give them a starting point, usually I find, hopefully, this person is not just being non-responsive because they want to be non-responsive. Usually they're busy. And so going and meeting them halfway might show them a little bit of the kindness that you hope they'll return to you. And for the future, I think the answer, you've already answered it, right? You set the expectations. You have clear deadlines. If you can work a flex day into your schedule, I like to. You know, things do go wrong, so I like to have that. And then also, I'm, because of my background writing in English, I get ahead of this a lot of times by doing outlining exercises, by helping them, my writers. I'll pull in the prompts. I'll pull in anything the RFP says. I might pull in some stuff from other proposals. We all know the kind of intimidation of the blinking cursor on a white page. And so if I can prevent that and make it easier on them, I get a lot better response and I get a lot better just kind of participation in general.
Great. Thank you. Paul, what thoughts do you have for Ben?
Well, Ben, you've got quite a situation here. I guess there's a couple thoughts. One is, you said that this person's an essential writer. So they're essential, and maybe that part is not getting through to them. Maybe they're not realizing how essential they are to the process. And perhaps they don't get much in the way of acknowledgement of their contribution to the overall effort. So why not take it upon yourself to give them something other than criticism? Mm-hmm. You had to go to their manager. They're kind of behind the eight ball now. But if there's something that the individual has done in the past that really was an example of excellent writing, and maybe would be even better if it was turned in on time, point to that. Compliment them on that. We've got to repair the relationship between Ben and their coworker at the same time that we're focused on getting the work accomplished. And which of those is more important in the short term? Probably the latter, but in the long term, it's got to be the former. So see what you can do to repair that relationship by looking for the good. Find something positive that you can definitely give them credit for and see how you can, you know, talk to them honestly. How can we move forward from this?
Paul and Mercedes, I think those are both really good reflections. So thinking about, right, like I think at the end of the day, no matter how someone is coming across, most likely it has nothing to do with you. And it has nothing to do with something that you're doing. It's probably more whatever's on their desk. I think we as a profession do far too much bending over backwards to get people to cooperate. And it's not our fault and it's not our team's fault. It's, you know, the fault of, I'm going to go there, corporate America, putting all of this pressure on people to do so much in so little time and make money, right? Like that's the core issue, is that we give people these jobs that are far too big and far too much, and it's just impossible. So you know, Mercedes, you were looking at like, hey, they're probably really busy, and is there something that you can do, some support that you can provide? And Paul, you were looking really at the relationship and making sure that you kind of start over and repair that relationship, and you know, maybe they're feeling a little bit neglected. And I think along those same lines, I would say both in the sense of what you can do now and how you can prevent this in the future is to have a conversation. I wasn't sure from the letter whether or not that had happened. You know, Ben talked about best practices, setting expectations, and all of these really fantastic tools that we have in our tool belts as proposal managers. And while those are all really good, sometimes it is crossing that divide and getting to the heart of the problem. You know, Ben also mentioned that they're only in the office one day a week, which I'm assuming means that they've been largely remote, you know, and still, you know, still remote 4 days a week. And sometimes when we don't have that face-to-face interaction, we lose that humanity part of the equation. And so reaching out and having a conversation and really, you know, being a little bit vulnerable yourself and saying, you know, I've been struggling with this and that too. And maybe that's probably not the first conversation that you can like dive right into the deep stuff, right? You really, like Paul said, need to make an effort to mend the relationship and see where she's coming from. That does not excuse not meeting deadlines. It doesn't excuse the bad behavior by any means, but it does help to really get to the core of it and maybe, you know, build that relationship back up so that you can work together better. And then in the future, you know, the conversation might not need to be quite as intense, because I do think there needs to be a little bit of a, you know, level set, explaining, you know, why did Ben go to the manager, right? Like, and really being truthful about that and giving her a chance to respond and why that was an issue for her. You know, but in the future that the conversation can, you know, can start from, hey, you know, how are things going? I've noticed, you know, it's been really hard for you to meet deadlines. You know, I really need those deadlines in order to get things done and to make sure that, you know, we're putting together a proposal that's not only got the best chance of winning, but that's not going to get us into any trouble, right? So really helping to define roles. And, you know, at the end of the day, if that doesn't work, if you can't repair the relationship, you know, it's going back to basics. And maybe, again, like Mercedes was mentioning, looping that manager back in and saying, I've tried. And even, you know, sometimes depending on the culture of your company, you could reach out to the manager and say, hey, I've noticed, you know, after I had talked to you, it really broke the relationship. What can I do to help? Because, you know, a good leader really knows their people and knows what they need and can help to help with those kinds of situations.
Yeah, Heather, you mentioned in the future, you know, the conversation and like what happened before the manager. And that's one thing I would say I do in my own workload. Before I would escalate to a manager, I might do like a soft accountability where I send out a table of the assignments and what's been, you know, what's overdue or what's complete. And there's some visibility. And a lot of times someone sees that and is like, ooh, my peers are saying I'm falling behind, and that boosts the accountability. And that's like a smaller step before you have to actually escalate to a manager.
Yeah, absolutely. And not that there's anything wrong. I mean, you know, if you're at the 11th hour and you haven't gotten something and you really need, like, there's nothing wrong with going to a manager. But, you know, if there are things that you can do before taking that next step, I think it really can go a long way.
Okay. Those sound like excellent answers. Well, we hope everybody's enjoyed this episode of Shortlisted and that you'll join us next month.
And as always, a quick disclaimer and reminder. The advice offered in this podcast is intended for informational and entertainment purposes only. Use of this podcast is not intended to replace or substitute any professional, financial, medical, legal, or other advice. This podcast, its hosts, and APM PGMC are not responsible for the outcome or results following any advice in any given situation. You, and only you, are completely responsible for your actions.
Thanks, Heather. If we're now on your final list of podcast favorites, we'd love to hear from you. Email our producer at kstutsman, K-S-T-U-T-S-M-A-N, at gmcapmp.org. To all those winning business out there, on behalf of me, Heather, our special guest Mercedes, and all of us in the Greater Midwest Chapter, we'll GM see you next time on Shortlisted.